This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access shows live or as podcast by going online to kuci.org. This is the In the Garden show produced by UC Cooperative Master Gardeners of Orange County. My name is Chris Bonner, and I'll be your host for the hour. Today's program is really an exciting one, Waterwise Gardening with the Irvine Ranch Water District, featuring an interview with Juan Garcia, a water use efficiency specialist with the district. Good morning, Juan. It's so nice to have you on the show today.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Juan specializes in landscape water use efficiency. He has a bachelor's of science in ornamental horticulture from Cal Poly Pomona. And before joining Irvine Ranch Water District, he worked in landscape contracting, waterwise consulting, and community education. While California has always had periods of drought, the current drought has been particularly severe. As gardeners, we know the effects all too well. The 25% mandatory reductions in urban water use has resulted in some homes with dry, withered, or even dead plants and trees. Fortunately, though, we're seeing many more homeowners who are installing new landscaping, using different plants, equipment, and irrigation schedules that are more in tune with our naturally dry climate. The result is beautiful landscapes that use only a fraction of the water of their old traditional yards. Now, homeowners have many resources available to make their gardens more water-wise, including landscape contractors, nurseries, and UC Master Gardeners. On today's program, we're going to introduce you to another great resource in helping you to reinvent your home landscape. If you live in Irvine, you know the Irvine Ranch Water District, or IRWD, provides safe drinking water, wastewater collection and treatment, recycled water programs, and environmentally sound urban runoff management and treatment. What you may not know is that IRWD is also a leader in providing water-wise landscape workshops, information, and web resources. On today's show, we'll learn about IRWD's Rightscape program and how it helps homeowners choose the right plants, the right equipment, and the right irrigation practices to have beautiful water-wise landscapes and gardens. Juan, you have a really interesting job, water use efficiency specialist. Tell us about that.
Oh, thank you, Chris. Yeah, you know, I really love my job. It's really fun. As a water use efficiency specialist, you know, I assist our customers with their overall water use practices inside and outside the home, whether it's a place or a business in general. My main focus is the landscape. You know, I'm actually the water use efficiency landscape specialist for the district. My focus are assisting our customers with their landscape and water management issues they might encounter. I work with residents, commercial customers, HOAs, public agencies such as schools, and other businesses or sites that have landscape and irrigation concerns.
What's the most fun part about your job?
I really love doing the educational programs.
Right, the workshops.
The workshops.
That's fun. You get a group of people who are like-minded people, and
exactly.
You talk about stuff that you love and that they love, and you're helping them out.
Yeah, it's a big audience. You really get to reach a large portion of our customers. You know, everybody from residents to professionals come into the workshops.
Now, to be able to be effective in teaching a class like that, you really have to have kind of an interesting and unique background. Public outreach and education, horticulture, landscape contracting, water conservation and efficiency. Tell us about your background and how you got prepared to do this really kind of amazing job.
Well, unique is right. You know, it all started at Mount San Antonio College, I would say. There I met a fantastic professor, Mr. Dave Lanham, that really saw that my main interest was working in landscape and really kind of pushed me towards going on that route, per se, looking at horticulture, plant material, landscapes, kind of in a whole new way. You know, you see it all the way around us as we walk in our communities, drive around, and you kind of glance at it and it goes by so quick. But once you start to learn more and more about how to manage it, what it involves, and you really start to take more interest into it.
Right.
And then from there, you know, moving on to Cal Poly, but of course, you know, having him as a mentor, you know, I started to learn more and more about sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
Really looking at the type of plants we use, you know, how we use water, how is it affecting our environment, and that really kind of gets you going. But you know, that's where I really started to find a passion into landscaping.
And then after Cal Poly, where did you go?
Well, during my whole school stint, I was actually working in the nurseries as well, so I got to learn that aspect of plant material, actually growing it.
So you know how to grow plants.
Yes.
Which is an important thing.
Yes. You see it from seedling, cuttings, propagation to a full plant that somebody purchases and puts out in their landscape
right.
or home, which is really, once again, just broadens more my perspective on plant material.
So after the nurseries, you were involved in landscape contracting and WaterWise consulting?
Yes. Well, when I was working in the nurseries, also a couple of my friends and I started to do landscape projects, landscape installations. We worked under one of my friends' C27 license, and we're out there just installing landscapes, getting dirty, irrigation systems, you name it.
Yeah. And again, knowing plants is great, but actually knowing how to design and put together a landscape that's going to work,
exactly.
to build it so that it meets not just the codes, but it also is makes it easy for the homeowner to maintain that landscape, that investment for a long period of time.
Sure, and one thing we always spoke with the homeowners is the functionality of it. It has to serve a purpose. You have to use water in a conscious way, and you also get a beautifier environment. That's the main thing.
I think that's great. Let's start kind of with the big picture about the RightScape, the WaterWise program at IRWD. So IRWD is known for being innovative and proactive in all aspects of your organization. And that seems especially true when it comes to helping your customers maintain healthy, beautiful, and water-wise gardens and home landscapes. Share with our listeners kind of the big picture. How does water-wise gardening and landscaping fit in with all the ways IRWD is trying to help customers get the most out of the water while maintaining the quality of life that's so important to those of us here in Orange County?
At IRWD, we understand the importance of preserving California water supplies, especially in time of drought. We have taken many steps over the years to encourage water use efficiency and implement innovative water conservation practices or measures. Back in 1991, our first steps we took in response to the drought conditions were to implement what we call our budget-based conservation rate structure.
Okay, what's that?
Well, this rate structure promotes water efficiency by actively encouraging customers to use the proper amounts of water for both indoor and outdoor landscapes as well as commercial institutional sites.
So just roughly indoor uses versus outdoor uses for the typical homeowner, what's the percentage breakdown typically?
Well, typically, about 50 to 70% of our water use goes out to the landscape, which
okay.
is a pretty hefty number there.
So it's pretty important to be paying attention to the landscaping. Inside, you're looking at new fixtures, more water-efficient fixtures, and all the things that we can do to not waste this precious potable water supply.
Yeah, that's correct. Technology gets better for indoor water use fixtures, the water consumption goes down, but it's really all about practices, what people do on a day-to-day basis, which starts to bring down that water use.
Right, and I know the recycled water programs, Orange County and IRWD in particular, is just a worldwide leader. I mean, people come from all over the world to see how your district uses recycled water, especially in public space watering of landscapes. And I think that's really kind of a key thing here is by doing that makes more water available for homeowners who can't really tie into the recycled water in the same way that we could in our parks and our medians.
That's correct. And that's one thing that's important. Sometimes I think public perception, they see the water out there and they assume sometimes, that it's just normal potable water. But,
right.
We do have signage everywhere that states, this is being watered with recycled water. And once again, that water is being used for a good purpose amongst other uses that we use recycled water for. But predominantly, it's a lot of landscape out there that gets watered with recycled water.
So just give me kind of an overview on the RightScape program. What are the different components of the RightScape program where you interact with the public?
Well, now, when it comes to the RightScape programs, we have what we call our RightScape workshop series. These are several classes that focus in on RightScaping or sustainable landscaping practices.
Okay, and we'll get more into that here in a couple minutes.
Sure. We also have great web resources. We have our online RightScape Now website that has all the information on rebates and landscape.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have our RightScape Resources website, which is really a great landscape plant database site.
Okay, so RightScaping, I've been a gardener my whole life, and I've heard water wise gardening before, but I had not heard rightscaping. So let's tell us about rightscaping. What is that? What does that include?
Well, rightscaping. Wow, this is a great topic. Well, rightscape, plain and simple, it's about looking at the landscape and selecting the right plants, selecting the right irrigation equipment, and looking at the ways we're going to water, the right schedule. So that's our main three emphasis when it comes to rightscape: the right plants, the right equipment, and the right scheduling.
Let's talk about the classes specifically. You say you've got the rightscape workshop. When's the next workshop coming up, and how can people find out about them?
Well, the next workshops are going to be coming up this spring. So if you can always go to rightscapenow.com for information on those workshops. But we're going to start off with, of course, our most popular workshop is the right plants. We do offer other workshops at the district here. We are offering the California Friendly Landscape Training Workshops, which are going to be coming up in January.
What's the profile of people that come to these workshops?
Well, when it comes to these workshops, we get everybody from residents, professional landscapers, the Moblo and Go guys, just an array of people. And, of course, you know, the people out there with a lot of opinions as we get our good old gardeners and landscapers out there.
Now, I live just south of here, and I'm served by a different retail water district. Can I come to these workshops?
Sure. These workshops are open to anybody that, you know, gets an ear out there and knows that we're having one.
That's great. Let's take a deeper dive now into the topics that actually go into the rightscape workshops. Maybe let's start with the right plants.
Well, let's see, the right plants. When it comes to the right plants workshop, you know, we're really trying to get customers to do a little research on plant material. You know, as a customer, sometimes we just want to know, you know, which plants do I need to get, and, you know, where do I get these plants? But it's not just really about that. It's really about, you know, educating them on things like naming the plant the right name. All those scientific names might look a little scary sometimes to people, but, you know, it's very important when selecting plant material to really look at what are those names and what do those names mean. Looking at our unique climate that we have here and selecting the right plants that are climate appropriate for our area. But also educating them on the vast number of plants we have in there, and especially California native plants, really to look at these types of plants and compare them to non-native drought-tolerant plants. You know, their water needs differ, cultural practices differ. Just overall, there's a little bit of care from one type to the other when you talk about those two plants.
So on California natives, of course, there are more resources than used to be. There's a great nursery down in San Juan that specializes in this. But still, when you go to a nursery and you're looking for California natives, you're seeing mostly plants that have been developed, cultivars that have been developed for disease resistance, for color, for flower, for ease of growth and everything.
Sure.
But for most of the plants that I'll find in my local nursery, though, are they all necessarily bad plants when it comes to how much water they use? Or are there a lot of – or can I stick with some of my tried and true favorites and
exactly.
Still work with them?
No, exactly. That's correct. That's one thing that I do tell the customers is that, you know, when you look at your plants, you know, when you go to a local nursery, you know, they might not have all these California native plants they might be looking for. They will have some, but it's all about – selecting drought-tolerant plants. When I say drought-tolerant plants, medium water-use plants, and all these nurseries have medium water-use plants in stock, but people don't look at it that way. They see color, and they're thriving. They think, oh, that must be a high-water-use plant. It's really to educate them that, no, it's a medium water-use plant. As long as you look at that little ticket on there, a little tag, and it says medium water use or lower, you know, it's able to be used in a landscape.
When I got the information from my water district about reducing my water use, it's like, all right. So I just started taking the Master Gardener classes at this time. One of the lines that they used is most homeowners could reduce their landscape irrigation by 50% without changing plants or anything and probably be okay. And I'm here sitting here to tell you that actually that was true for me. I went through and I counted up how many minutes of irrigation I had, not really worrying about the number of sprinkler heads right now, but just total minutes of irrigation.
Sure.
I cut my number of minutes in half, literally in half. I had a few spots on my lawn that weren't being reached by the sprinkler heads because they had an equipment problem. But overall, after 2 years, the yard didn't really look that much different than it did when it started. Now, as I've kind of gotten into it, it's like, well, let's look at this bed right now. I want to refresh this bed right now. So rather than putting in just the plants that I used to have, now it's like, well, what about succulents? There's really some great selections on succulents now, and that's kind of fun to play with new plants. But this idea of you don't have to redo your whole yard at once, that you can kind of take it a piece at a time. You don't have to, you know, spend all this money to have somebody re-landscape or all the work it would take to redo everything. You can kind of do it a piece at a time by introducing new and different plants and seeing what works.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, sometimes it could be overwhelming for the homeowner, you know, especially when the drought news comes out and everything. It's like, wow, do I have to really change everything I do? It's like, not really. Just change a little bit of your habits, of your water practices indoor, and then consider doing a little portion of your landscape.
Right.
Now, you don't have to do much, like you said.
And natives are good, but I think one important thing for all of us to remember is, like any plant in that first year of getting established, you don't start by not irrigating a native plant. You have to get it established, right?
Yeah, that's correct, yes. You treat every plant the same. You know, when you're planting, water the plant, of course. You know, plant it in. Make sure it gets water so the roots doesn't dry out. And try to get that plant established. And I've always encouraged our customers to plant small. You know, when you plant something 1 gallon or even a 4-inch pot, it's the best thing you can do for your landscape. It might not look full right away. You give that plant a year or two, and it's going to just push out and
right,
just fill
right.
in completely. And right now is, you know, we're getting into that season where it's the best time to start our
This
planting.
Is the time to be planting, and so I think that's really a key thing right now here in these winter months. This is really, again, we've got our weather's mild enough. We don't want to get out there when it's wet and muddy, but again, we have enough good weather that this is a great time of year to be looking about some new plant choices.
Well, that might be a little fun though, out there sometimes.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. What's next? After the right plants, what comes next?
Well, after the right plants, you know, try to get people to understand, like, wow, we have all these great plants we can use. Then we start getting into the irrigation system. You know, it's sometimes if you say irrigation to a homeowner, they kind of back away. So we try to put a new spin on it, just calling it the right equipment. So there's an interest there. What do you mean by the right equipment? Well, let's start looking at all the pieces and components of your irrigation system.
Okay.
It's not that scary when you look at it.
Right.
And then try to, you know, the first thing is just to do a simple walkthrough of your system. Make sure it's working as efficiently as possible.
Right.
It's the first thing they can. If they walk away from that class doing just that, it's like, wow.
So turning each sprinkler circuit on and going and looking and watching and seeing, is it doing what I want it to do, which
that's
is
correct.
To water plants, and I don't want to be watering a sidewalk because I'm wasting water.
Yeah, that's correct, and we see that a lot happen.
Yeah.
And then we start to delve into all the components, all the new technologies that are coming out. We look at all these little fixtures first, you know, spray heads and how efficient or inefficient they are and what things that we can do to make them work a lot better. We start looking at how the system is laid out. Sometimes you get to some irrigation systems that are laid out where they're watering, you know, specifically just the lawn or just the planters, you know, a well-built system. But
so a little bit of hydrozoning.
Yeah, a little bit of hydrozoning here and there. And then we start getting into, people really love talking about drip. So that's, we really start to look at, what can I do with my system now to make it more efficient, whether it be put in a new nozzle type, do some pressure regulation, or how about if I just want to convert to drip? Is it that difficult to do? Really
right.
delve into that aspect of that class.
I think drip is really interesting. We redid our yard front and back about 8 years ago, and our vegetable beds, I put those on drip, and that was easy. And again, I was redoing everything anyhow. And it's like, wow, this is really great. I mean, these plants are happy when they get the right amount of water, aren't they?
Yeah, sure. You know, and you're using water in an efficient manner. We're talking going from something that's being sprayed all over the place and now directed to the root zone.
Right. So I've got fewer weeds. The plants are happy. Yeah. And, you know, we all, if you garden, you weed, and that's kind of part of the process. And there's kind of a certain zen to being in the garden, and weeding is part of that. But if I can spend more of my time propagating and planting and thinking and doing kind of the fun parts of the gardening job, a little less of the weeding, there's nothing wrong with that.
Sure, exactly.
We talked about nozzles. What about irrigation controllers?
Well, we do get into controllers during that class. I talk about both standard controllers and then also bring up what, you know, these new fancy weather-based irrigation controllers and look at them thoroughly. Talk about the pros and cons of each type of system.
So, Juan, tell me about weather-based irrigation controllers. How do those actually work?
They're like almost a standard controller, but they have these little bits and pieces that start to make it what we call a smart controller.
Okay. So they work off real-time data, or are they working off historic data, or both?
Both. Some controllers are working off of real-time data. Some are working off of historic data, but with using sensors to do their adjustments. Some have soil sensors. Some are just working off of Wi-Fi information or signal-based information that the controller's receiving, taking that all into perspective, doing the computations and throwing it out there. These weather-based controllers are getting better and better now. I mean, it's great to go to a controller and actually tell it what you're watering, with what the type of irrigation system, what kind of soils you have, and if you have any kind of slopes. It takes all that information and starts to tailor itself to your landscape.
I know I've got a neighbor, and he's a skeptic, let's just say.
Yeah.
So he's like, gee, Chris, you know, weather-based controllers sound great, but what if I can see my yard needs water and my controller's got me locked out so I can't turn the sprinklers on? Is that how they work?
No. The controllers won't lock you out. And that's one thing that, you know, I do talk a lot with our customers about weather-based controllers is that it's not a one product for everybody.
Right.
They will point out inefficiencies of your irrigation system when you install weather-based controllers, just because they automatically tune themselves to your landscape. So there's a lot of things that you have to be aware of before installing.
So it's helping you to water more efficiently, more wisely, but you still are in control.
Yes, that's correct, because you can still make any kind of adjustments for your site's conditions. You know, sometimes these controllers just have one sensor that it's going off of, and it might not be the best sensor or at the right place, but that's when you can go in there and fine-tune them. So you can actually make them work for you. That's the best thing.
The third part of rightscaping, so we talked about right plants, right equipment, the right schedule.
Yes.
Tell our listeners about that.
Well, now the right schedule, it's kind of a mishmash. We just finished talking about plants, and we talked about irrigation equipment. Right schedule, I start to get in, I guess, some of the funner stuff when it comes to landscaping. Sure, because when it comes to landscaping, you know, we start getting into the factors of scheduling when it comes to
right.
The plants, the irrigation, the soils. And one thing is, sure, we have all these gadgets out there watering the landscape, but, you know, our first source of watering should always be rain. So there's a big section on
and that's really an important part of sustainability.
Exactly. You know, sustainability gets thrown out there a lot. I tell people, you know, you want to see a true sustainable landscape, look at the hills. Are the plants green? There it is. You know, that's a self-sustaining landscape. But our environment's, you know, much, much different. You know, we manipulate plant material and watering, and, you know, we're trying to mimic rainfall out there. And, you know, we're trying to get the water out there as best as possible in the most efficient manner. And hopefully, you know, just protecting our environment at the same time.
So it's not necessarily finding plants that don't need any irrigation, finding plants that more of the year they can rely on what Mother Nature provides so that we don't have to have as much of our precious water going out through sprinkler heads.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, and I always encourage people, hey, if you're happy with hand watering, great, go out there and hand water, you know, instead of having to rely on, you know, your controller, your timer.
Another neighbor, I would call her a heroic gardener, because she's out there hand watering. There's no restrictions where she lives on hand watering, and so she basically wants to keep her garden and her flowers exactly as they are, and you can do that. But it's just a lot more work and more effort. And what do you go on vacation? So this idea of getting things that just take care of themselves without intervention, without the irrigation. I mean, 20 years ago, virtually 100% of all yards depended on irrigation to look nice. And I like this idea of rightscaping, where we're kind of heading towards sustainable home gardens and landscapes that can look good most of the year, all the year, more of the year than it is right now, without this intensive irrigation.
Exactly. You know, I call that, it's the green haze versus, you know, a colorful landscape. You know, that's one of, that's something right now that we're really pushing. One of our campaign slogans right now is color your world. Plant now, plant later. Well, we're starting to do the planting now, and the planting later is starting to approach us. So it's a great time to look at your landscape and say, wow, can I have something there that just the green haze? Sure. Something that's going to give me flowers, color throughout the entire year. There's, as you know, Chris, there's a lot of plants out there that could do that for us.
And again, I like, I'm a plant guy, and my daughter lives up in the San Fernando Valley, and it just breaks my heart. There's these companies that come in, and they, for free, will put in a water-wise landscape, and they're, when they were getting the turf removals,
yes,
and they bring in a truckload of gravel, and they put like, you know, 15 or 20 plants in an even rectangular grid. All that gravel stores up the heat, and it just cooks the plants.
Yes.
And you end up with these dead sticks and a gravel, and it doesn't provide the beauty and the cooling of plant-based landscapes. And so you know, I think that certainly it's an efficient landscape, but does it really provide the benefits to the people living in those homes?
Well, you know, it goes, I start thinking back in my landscaping days where the customer is always right. You know, the customer wants, the customer gets. But I don't think there was too much from those types of companies going out there and assisting the customer, educating them on what they're about to do.
Right.
You know, those rocks create the heat islands.
Right.
And it's just more heat around your home, and those plants just cook out there. I mean, what a shame when it came to projects like that.
But,
we stay away from that. One thing is, you know, we encourage homeowners to put plant material out there. You know, it's going to be better for the environment. If they are going to put hardscape to keep it permeable,
Sure
that water can get through and get back into the ground. And to really consider if you're thinking about just putting rocks out there, it's like, what's that going to do to your little microclimate around your home?
Right.
Yeah, you know, and once again, try to educate them as best as possible on what they can do. We have great resources for them when it comes to landscaping and ideas, and provide them with as best information as we can to help them, guide them on their way.
I'd like to take a short station break now to let you know you're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine and KUCI.org online. This is the In the Garden Show produced by UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. I'm Chris Bonner, your host for the hour. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. There's so much information online right now, and if you do a web search on OC Master Gardener, select the link to the UC Master Gardener program, and you'll find out about weeds, pests, ornamental plants, and edibles. We also give month-by-month gardening tips and information about soils and fertilizer, mulching, and compost. We also give our own workshops, in addition to the workshops that Irvine Ranch Water District does. UC Master Gardeners has workshops and speaking engagements throughout the county throughout the year. This week's topic is water-wise gardening with the Irvine Ranch Water District. My guest is Juan Garcia, a water use efficiency specialist with the district, who focuses on landscape water-wise gardening. Now let's return to our interview with Juan. Juan, one of the topics that I know is included in the class is rainwater harvesting. Tell our users a little bit about that and some of the rebates that are involved with that.
Well, when it comes to rainwater harvesting, you know, once again, it's to hopefully use rainwater as our first source of irrigation. And by using that rainwater, well, how do we use it? It's the main thing is we need to capture that water.
Okay.
And that's one thing. We do offer rebates as a district for rain barrels and cisterns.
Okay.
Which is a great catchment for these types of systems. Of course, there's going to be a little bit of extra things you need to do with those gutters, but that's one thing.
I know what a rain barrel is. What's a cistern?
A cistern is just a larger containment. You know?
Okay.
It's like a larger rain barrel that can go either above ground or below ground.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I get one of these rain barrels or cisterns, are there any kind of rebates available?
Yeah, there's some rebates available through the district. If you go to rightscapenow.com, there's some great information on the amounts.
Again, this is kind of a fun thing to do. A lot of people that I work with, master gardener type people, they really are into this big time. So they've got rain barrels on all their downspouts.
Yes.
And they use it for their vegetables, for their herbs, for their flower beds. And they hold that water. They don't use it any time. They wait until the really hot times where you want to get a little bit of extra water, a little extra TLC for those plants that might might be experiencing a little bit of water or heat stress. Turf removal is a big part of water savings. And again, I know this is for some water districts, this has been the sole part of the program, and I think that's one of the cool things about IRWD. But turf is important. So what's going on with turf removal rebates, and how does IRWD support both do-it-yourself and contractor approaches to this?
Well, here at the district, we do offer a turf removal incentive for our customers.
Okay.
Currently, the program is at $2 per square foot for residential customers. Commercial.
That's $2 per square foot.
Yeah, $2 per square foot for residential customers. Commercial customers are at $1 a square foot. And public agencies start off at $2 per square foot for the first 3,000 and then $1 a square foot after. But both all these have a kind of our limit or our cutoff in residential properties, 3,000 square feet.
And so we're going to talk a little bit more about the do-it-yourself process here. But tell us about the contractor program. How does that work?
Well, we don't promote contractors, but
okay.
We do have resources available to our residents for contractors if they're looking out for contractors. Many of our contractors have attended training workshops here at the district, and by attending those workshops, we were able to put them on a website resource list. And we also have certain landscape designers as well on that resource list.
Okay.
So we do offer assistance to customers when they're out there looking for a contractor. But once again, we encourage them to really do their research when hiring anybody and make sure, of course, that they're licensed. Many of the rebates for the turf removal program do require that a licensed contractor does the work for them to be reimbursed for that rebate.
So if I just go out and replace my turf, I can just send I can just send an email to the district, and they're going to give me back some money?
No. The first thing is to – no, that, I wish that was the case. I would have done it myself. But the first thing is to just follow the guidelines. You have to submit an application first for approval. Your application with the pictures of the site you're going to be removing, measurements, and so forth. But once you get approved – you'll get an email saying, go ahead and begin your project, and then you're off and running and doing your project.
So you need to get prior approval before you do the removal, get it all set up with IRWD, then do the project, and then you get the rebate?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. So take us through the process. So if I'm whether it's a contractor or a do-it-yourselfer, what's involved with a turf removal process?
Well, when it comes to turf removal, first thing is always evaluation. Evaluate your site. Consider how much you're going to be taking out. If you're going to be following the turf removal program or participating in it, you have to follow the guidelines on minimum square footage. But if you're just your normal person out there that wants to do this with or without a rebate, evaluate your site. What part of your grass is functional?
Okay.
How much do you actually use? Do I need to keep it?
Do I need to remove all my turf? Or
no, not at all. No, you can. I'm not a turf hater. It's just one of those things where it's a high water consuming plant.
Right.
So, when I looked at doing my project, for instance, I looked at that site. I said, I do a lot of my recreating in the backyard, so that's the grass area I'm going to keep, and I'm going to go ahead and change out my front area because it's just the green haze out there.
So it goes back to what's the purpose of the turf, and
yes.
So in front, the purpose of the turf is to provide a flat, low, green palette.
Exactly.
That the rest of the stuff gets – but in the backyard, maybe you've got kids, maybe you've got pets.
Exactly.
And so you've got a different function and purpose to the turf. So thinking about what is the purpose of the turf that you're thinking about removing.
Yeah, how much do I really need out there? And then the next thing is, once you got that ready to go, start thinking of a plan, creating your plant list, and, go to workshops, come to one of our workshops and – learn about the different plants, equipment that's available for you to install or upgrade on your landscape. Do a little research on designers. Unless you're a homeowner that's comfortable with doing design, we
right.
do offer workshops on design as well. But really start to get into the whole frame of mind of what am I going to start to do? Start planning, get your list going, and then are you going to do it yourself or are you going to hire somebody?
Okay,
it's always the key thing.
All right, so now we're ready to go. We've done the evaluation. We've got a plan. What's next?
Now is trying to get rid of that grass or killing off the grass,
right,
which
so
can be
we,
a little
How do
tricky.
We kill that turf?
Well, there's everything from eco-friendly to, you know it, good old herbicides out there. Educate yourself on each of those processes, everything from solarization, you know, trying to cook it off using sheets and covers, to even sheet mulching. Sheet mulching is where you just start laying cardboard and mulch and
right.
compost on top of it. You can start planting right away.
So the solarization, you put clear plastic down and it basically cooks the turf
yeah.
and it kills it through heat, essentially.
Yes, the pros and the cons is it works, but it takes a while.
Right.
It doesn't look pretty out there.
This isn't probably the right season to be doing it.
No, it's always got to be in the hottest time of the year. You want to really cook that stuff off.
Right. How long do you have to do that for? A couple of months?
It could go from months to quite a bit.
You know? Okay. And then the same thing with the cardboard,
yeah.
the mulching.
The lasagna composting.
That's going to take a while.
It's going to take a while. But the good thing is if you want to start planting right away, you can do so. You're going to be out there pulling grass and bits
right.
here and there throughout the years as to come.
And so, of course, mechanically removing it, but you're going to take some soil with it. You're going to lose
yes.
some soil when you do that.
Yeah, one thing is whenever we mechanically remove it, one thing I encourage customers to do is to, you know, start sod cutting and removing it. And turn it upside down, hopefully let it dry out, and
right.
try to remove as much soil as possible and then get rid of that grass.
And then herbicides, they work, follow the label instructions.
Yeah.
Again, they're designed to be safe both to the gardener as well as safe to the environment if you follow the label instructions on those, and they are effective.
Yeah, one thing is to always follow the guidelines of any kind of product, chemical product that you'd be using out there.
So I've killed the turf. Now what's next?
Now it's, of course, clearing the area and start shaping that land. What are you going to use it for?
Okay.
You know, are you going to start to create swales and little berms to collect that water when it comes off their gutters or something that's very – you got to always think about the layout of the landscape, where your plant's going to go, start hydrozoning everything. Are you going to use your existing irrigation system?
So part of your evaluation, your planning might be mapping out where your existing irrigation system is and thinking about what new zones or changes to zones you want to look at.
Yeah, what's going to stay, what's going to go, capping,
right.
cutting off water, yeah.
Right. And then we've got irrigation now, and now we're going to, whatever our plant list, we're going to be working, if we're going to do hardscaping or softscaping, what are we going to be putting in place?
Yeah, exactly. So now it's all about putting, you know, am I going to put pavers in, what kind of stepping stones? And the good thing is once everything is installed, the irrigation is done, the plants are in, just don't forget to mulch the area.
Got it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the biggest payoffs, the biggest bang for the bucks is the mulching.
Yeah, that mulching. You know,
I mean, that's so good for so many different reasons.
Yeah, to be effective, you know, one thing I like to do before I mulch is I lay down a good few layers of newspaper, kind of as a weed barrier.
Oh, interesting.
Go a little natural, yeah. Some black and white print out there, and then mulch right on top of it.
Cool.
Yeah.
So it is a project that a homeowner could do it, a DIY, a do-it-yourself type of project. It's within the scope of most home gardeners?
Yeah, that's correct. I think if a homeowner is really thinking about doing it, they want to do it themselves. It just takes a little elbow grease and a little know-how, and you're off and running.
Now, artificial turf, everybody was gaga over artificial turf for a while, and it was, you know, the cat's meow, and you still see it, and it looks like there really have been some improvements in the product. So it's better, it doesn't look like the old, mini golf putting green type material that some of the first ones did. But
well, unless you like that, though, Chris.
Where are we at with artificial turf right now? Is it allowed? Is it an option in Irvine? Does IRWD have a position on artificial turf?
Well, as a district, we allow artificial turf.
Okay.
We don't discriminate. We look at more of the water savings that could be achieved by the use of artificial turf,
okay.
or just to change out of the landscape. The rebate that we have is for turf removal. Sometimes we get customers thinking that we provide a rebate for artificial turf. No. No. The do-it-yourself program does allow artificial turf to go in, and it's the same $2 per square foot for the grass removal rebate that you're going to get.
So
you can go towards your project. But artificial turf – there's always the pros and cons, you know.
So tell it, you're a horticulturalist, you're a landscape expert. What are the pros and cons of artificial turf?
Pros, you know, it's aesthetically pleasing now. They're making it a lot better.
Right.
Making it permeable.
Right.
To
when you install it, usually looks pretty good, right, when it's installed.
Yeah, when it's installed. And then when you start getting the litter from the trees and the landscape around it, it looks even better. I mean, some of the stuff you really can't tell if it's grass or fake.
Maintenance is pretty low.
Maintenance is low.
Water's low.
Water's low.
So tell us about the cons.
Well, the cons, you know, it does heat up.
Oh.
Once again, do some research on it, you know, when it comes to the cons, because there's people talking about the toxicity of this and that, but once again, it goes back to doing that little bit of research beforehand.
Making an informed choice.
Making an informed choice, that's correct.
Yeah. I think the heat is one of the big ones that, because it looks green, it looks like it'd be cool, and you walk out there on your bare feet, and it's like, oh, this isn't cool, is it?
No, at a recent, that's funny you say that, at a recent landscape show, I saw an irrigation system that was supposed to be for artificial turf. That made me crack up. So I was like,
what, to cool it off?
It's basically to water it down or to wash it off. It's like, oh, okay.
Oh, my gosh. All right. That's all right.
Yeah. But that's all I have to say about artificial turf, really.
So let's talk about a turf removal project from a landscape design perspective. You know, we've seen where DIY or, you know, the results just haven't been pretty. So putting artificial turf aside for right now, just dealing with the design aspect of it, what design resources or advice do you have for homeowners that are considering turf removal?
Wow, here we go. So when it comes to resources, there's a couple of things that we have out there. You know, we just finished talking about the turf removal rebate program. But there's another program that we have, what's called the Turnkey Turf Program. It's similar to the turf removal program, but this program is for the homeowner that wants it done for them.
Uh-huh.
We have a contractor on board that's going to do everything from removal, landscape design, installation, irrigation, retrofit, and they're off and running.
Wow.
And it's not your typical where they're going to go in and do whatever they want. No, the contractor will sit with the homeowner, design something specific to their home on paper. And based off of that, the homeowner has some feedback. If he wants a couple of changes here and there, great.
Right.
But once they're comfortable with it, this is it. I'm ready to go. And all they have to do is, like that commercial says, set it and forget it. Sit back, relax, and it'll be installed for you.
So they've got photographs and examples and addresses of other customers that have gone through this. So the homeowner, if they're interested, they actually can see what it's going to look like.
Yeah, exactly. We actually have on our website, ridescapenow.com, we have a site specifically to these demonstration gardens where we have before and after pictures.
So I think that's the part that I think for, you know, if you've got, you know, lots of financial resources and you can just hire somebody, and, you know, obviously you can end up with either an okay project or a great project, depending on what your budget and the skills and experience of the contractor. But if you're doing it yourself, I mean, I think some homeowners, they just stick with what they've got because they're afraid that they're going to spend all this time and money and they're not going to end up with something that is any better or maybe looks worse than what they have right now.
Exactly. And for residents, if they really want to look, they can go to ridescapenow.com. Like I said, there's great before and afters, and we're going to start getting more and more pictures of the projects that are currently being worked on from beginning planting year one and year two, which is going to be really great. As long as they have patience, as we always tell these homeowners, sometimes they get these designs and it looks fabulous on paper. It gets to install time and it looks bare out there, you know, because they're expecting full-grown plants, and that's where we have to educate the customers.
I think that's, I mean, that goes beyond the turf removal. I mean,
again,
my wife, she's interior designer type. I'm the exterior guy, and she has no patience when it comes to, it's like, well, how come you bought such a small tree? How come you bought such a small plant? And why doesn't it look good right away? And it's like, it takes a while for a landscape to mature, and if you There's so many advantages to plant health and growth to not starting with big stuff that's maybe sitting in a 5 or 10 or 15 gallon or even in a box that's the plants sometimes get stunted because they don't turn those over as quickly.
Exactly. And that's a lot of our customers recently, one of the customers whose home was done, I could say almost it's been out a half a year, initially, you know, was like, wow, this is never going to grow in. Now he's actually telling us if we need to cut off some plants from his landscape to use them at other sites, we can go in there and do so, please.
Well, and I think that certainly was true with my re-landscaping project. I can see now that he overplanted.
Yeah.
And, you know, so as some of, you know, I had azaleas and I had lavender and I had some other smaller flowering perennials, well, the azaleas are the ones that kind of succeeded in some of the spots, and they kind of overgrew some of the other things, and just over time it changed the landscape in an okay way, but I think this idea of, you know, a more sparse looking landscape when you get started, there is a big education needed to help with that.
True, and that goes back to that little research. You know, you buy a 1 gallon plant and that tag on there says it's going to get 8 feet tall by 8 feet wide, and then you plant five of them 2 feet away from each other.
You know, my contractor, he partnered with a landscape architect, and it was interesting because both of them, I really thought I was getting full service, but as it turned out, their strength was in the overall design and the hardscape installation. When it got to the softscape, I discovered it's like, I know as much as these guys do. And it was like, do you really want to be doing this? And what about that? And I think the microclimate aspect, too, that would be one step I would probably suggest going back is in the evaluation stage. And again, this takes time. But actually going out and doing sun and shade mapping, you know, at the different equinoxes, you know, so four times a year, seeing where where's full shade, where you've got your mild or partial shade, where you got your full sun. Because, again, getting the right plant at the right place, planted at the right time, that's the UC Master Gardener mantra.
That's right.
And, again, even if it's suited and even if everything seems right, but you know, I've got this one bed. It surprised me when I did my sun mapping. It was like, oh, now I understand why things are dying here, because it gets 4 hours of early morning sun and it cooks everything right. And that full sun, full shade, those are some of the most challenging ones, especially that full afternoon sun.
Exactly. And during during our scheduling class, I do bring up our exposures. That's a very important topic that people kind of forget about. You know, where is the sun mapping? Is so true for a healthy landscape. One thing too is when people always say, well, what plants will do well in a shady area? What plants
will
do?
Right.
And you know, our Rightscape Resources webpage, our plant database, you know, you're able to go in there and create a plant list on those specific requirements. You know, if you want shrubs that are going to go into a half sun area that you want them only to be between 1 and 3 feet, those are all little selections you can make as you're doing your guided search, and then voila, you get this nice list of all these plants that fall under those specific needs, which can help out a lot of people.
So I see on your website that there are rebates for a number of things we've been talking about. So let's talk the irrigation controllers. So
yes.
How do I take advantage of an irrigation controller rebate program?
Well, the rebates, once again, they're a little different for each group of people. When I mean by group, I mean residents versus commercial.
So let's just focus on the residents, the homeowners.
Yeah. When it comes to residential rebates, you purchase any kind of product you're going to use that's on that rebate list. You have to make sure you do follow. There is a qualifying products list for any of our rebates that we do offer.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's important that before you buy that product, look on that list, make sure it's on there, and then go ahead and make your purchase, do your install. And when it comes to those rebates, there's a pretty good amount. For the residents, I believe it's up to $155 per controller, and also
that's not just for any controller. That's just going to be for a weather-based
weather-based
irrigation. So are there rebates for just a regular controller?
No, there are no rebates. We need to go buy one of those for
so there is an incentive here to sure. be a smarter gardener by getting a weather-based controller.
Yes.
Cool. And the same with the rain barrels and the cisterns. There's a list?
Yes, there's a list for rain barrels. Rain barrels are $75, and the cisterns could range anywhere from $200, $300, $400 each for the rebate.
Got it.
Yeah.
And these rotating sprinkler nozzles, I haven't used those, so tell me about those.
Well, you know, the rotating nozzles, as everybody says when it comes to the rebates, what we're really looking at is a water-efficient nozzle type. There are various nozzles available on that rebates list. Some of them are not rotating.
Okay.
Some of them are just fixed sprays, but they're in a very efficient, they put a place on water in a very efficient manner. The benefit of the rotary nozzles I'm seeing out there is they place water at a very slow rate.
Mm-hmm.
So the water's out there being placed.
It's more
out,
like a little stream,
yeah,
that's
little
going
streams,
slower than
little droplets. And,
yeah, rather and than a flood.
Exactly. Then rather than the flood, exactly. It allows the soil to better absorb that water. So you're going to run your system a little bit longer than you would do traditional spray heads, but once again, with a higher efficiency. You know, traditional spray heads are right around 75% efficient by my manufacturer. In a real world, I'm looking at more 50, 60%. But these rotating nozzles, it does increase that efficiency. You get into the 80s, 90% efficiencies with these nozzle types. But just like anything else, when it comes to any of these spray equipment, they always, it's very important to make sure that you they're pressure regulated. You know, a lot of things that we see out there when it comes to issues with nozzles is pressure regulation. You know, a lot of these nozzles require a lower pressure, 30, 40 psi,
mm,
and our systems are pushing out 60, 70 psi,
right,
which makes everything mist, and then all that water just disperses anywhere else,
right, right,
besides
right,
your landscape. So, you know, when you're thinking about doing a retrofit on these nozzles, some of them are easy. We just take out the existing nozzle, screw the new one in, but sometimes you might need to change out the whole body, put a pressure regulating body in there that's made for that nozzle type.
So this is a case where if you're re-landscaping, have it, somebody who does irrigation systems for a living, talking to them about it, talking about the different nozzle types. But this is a case where having an expert to help you do the initial installation, again, it's you have to decide for yourself what's right for you and your family and your budget.
That's correct.
But getting people that actually know what they're doing and know how to install these things and these issues with, you know, the different pressure requirements of some of this new equipment, you know, I might be okay with that as a homeowner, or I might be like, I don't know about this. Let's find somebody who actually knows what they're doing.
Exactly. You know, there's only so much we can, you know, I try to educate them as best as possible in the classes, but hopefully they can take some of that little bit of information and apply it themselves or go and seek somebody that can help them with those needs. And then not only is replacing those nozzles, but make sure that they're hopefully applying the right schedules. We do offer recommended schedules for our customers.
Perfect. So before we end the show, Juan, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, let's see. We do offer a lot of resources for our customers. We offer home checkups for people that think they might be overusing water or need help and staying within their water budgets. We do offer...
So home checkups. Does somebody actually come out to my house?
Yes, we have staff here that come out to your home.
Wow.
And help you look at your water use.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Okay, what else?
We have our Rightscape Now website.
Okay.
Once again, on that site, you're going to find a lot of information when it comes to landscaping and rebates.
And that website is?
It's rightscapenow.com.
All one word?
All one word.
Okay, just sort of type in Rightscape
yes.
Now, all no spaces, no hyphens, .org or .com?
.com.
.com, and we go
yes.
right there. Cool.
You'll find information on any kind of events we might have here at the district, classes, events, and so forth.
And I have to say, the website really is well-designed. It's attractive, it's fun, but it's also easy to find really good information.
No, it's a great information. Our public affairs team works really close with water use efficiency to make sure that our message is out there. That's correct.
Terrific.
And then one of my favorite websites that we've been making it better and better and better is our rightscaperesources.com
okay.
website. Now, that is our landscaping and gardening website.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Plant material, landscape design ideas, irrigation tips, just overall, what a great site when it comes to if you're a homeowner seeking information on gardening and landscaping, great site to go to. If you're a professional, once again, another great site to go to. We do have recommended irrigation schedules on our RideScapeNow.com. But if you want to create your own specific customized schedule, you can go to RideScapeResources.com, and there's a little symbol there that says create your watering schedule. You go in there and specifically make a tailor-made schedule for you.
So we've come to the close of our show, In the Garden. You've been listening to an interview with Juan Garcia, a water use efficiency specialist with the Irvine. Thank you, Juan, for sharing your expertise and time with us.
Oh, thank you, Chris, for having me.
Thank you for listening to KUCI, In the Garden Show.